You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome back into the Kansas City. We're not back in. Welcome to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, of course, the indefatigable Michael Engel. These Royals are not going to get Michael Engel down. Well, maybe they will, but they're not going to stop him from being my podcast co-host. So, Mike, how's it going tonight?
Well, the Royals have got me down a little bit. It's been.
I don't think you're alone in that one.
No, it's just, this is the first podcast in a while that we've done where the Royals aren't in first place. And there's, that's.
This is weird just to think about that for a second.
It's right. Just weird. Yeah. I mean, they spent like 32 days in first place or something like that. So it's crazy. The background on my computer, on like the desktop image, is. Of Sung Woo on the Hall of Fame the night that the Royals took first place. And
oh, nice.
It's outdated now. So for various reasons, which we will get into today, which is Monday, the 15th of September.
The 15th of September.
Yeah.
Remember the 15th of September.
Right. I hope it's not memorable, honestly. I hope it's just, oh, yeah, remember we won that game. And then the next day won another game and ta-da-da-da-da.
I hope we have a memorable October 15th.
That's exactly. That's the idea.
But in order to get to October 15th, the Royals need to make the playoffs. We're not even going to talk about how many games they'd have to win to get that far into October. But in order to make the playoffs, the Royals have to... I mean, they can obviously make the wild card, but if we're going to go for it, I heard this on the radio today. I think it was Keatsman who said something to the effect of that. I actually agree with, believe it or not, but just something to the effect of, hey, if we're going to go for this thing, I'm going to be greedy and want to take it all. So I'm with them. Let's take this division and do the whole thing. But in order to do that, Mike, I'm going to guess, this is just me spitballing here. Now, Ned Yost is probably going to say that I would never play baseball, so I wouldn't understand. But if they want to win, it's probably not a good idea to drop 3 out of 4 from one of the worst teams in the American League. Is that an astute observation?
Man, I mean, the Red Sox they've been rebuilding all year. They've had
defending World Series champions,
yeah,
though, right?
they've had some issues. They traded away Lester. They traded away John Lackey. Dustin Pedroia is out with a hand injury, just had surgery.
Jacoby
Ellsbury is not around anymore. You know, all these different guys that you expect to be there, the only guys really there are like Napoli and David Ortiz, and that's about it. They've got a bunch of guys that they've called up.
And Ortiz is just because, nobody else will really. He's kind of the Billy Butler of the Red Sox, except he has produced considerably more over his career.
He can't fit anywhere else, and he's expensive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he wasn't going to go anywhere. He's going to probably retire at Red Sox.
And he's like 40 almost, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's not much incentive for teams to go after him. And so, this is a team that's really mailing in the rest of their season, and they come to Kansas City and take 3 out of 4 after they had swept the Royals back in July. So the Royals against a crappy Red Sox team went 1-6.
Ugh.
And with 3 of those right in the heat of the playoffs, or the playoff race, where those are games that I don't know if they're just overlooking things or if it's just they are pressing or they're tired. I don't know what the problem is, but they lost those 3 games, and you really probably could have accepted a split, but you really need to win 3 of them if you're going to be able to call yourself a real contender for the division. Because now they have to make up ground, and they're running out of time to do that.
Well, people would constantly rag on us when you know, going back to the first half of the season, before the Royals kind of had their slide and dipped below 500 right after the All-Star break after getting swept by the Red Sox, before that happened, you know, they were kind of just teetering back and forth in the first half of the season. So, and us as you know, the podcasters and the Royals bloggers of the world would kind of, you know, just say, hey, look at this, you know, this is why this kind of thing is happening, pointing out some of the flaws in how the team was built and the organization and everything. Well, you know, this is not me trying to cry doom on this Royals season, but this is why we would try to point out those things and why you want the Royals to know those things. Because when you set up your team to have an extremely thin margin of error, and you basically plan and more or less hope to always be on the good side of that margin of error, these kind of things can happen, you know, and that's where you can go on these bad stretches. You know, the flip side is those really good stretches, 20, 24 of 30 wins, you know, that's the flip side, but that is more the anomaly than the kind of middling baseball the Royals have played for 75% of the season so far, you know? So, I mean, that's, just for future reference, you know, that's why we bring these things up, and that's why we talk about these things. And it's interesting to me when you look at the Royals and how they've played against the Red Sox. And then earlier in the season, we had a really somber show after they got swept by the Astros. And this isn't really so much Royals-centric, but just kind of funny that those are two teams that are probably in pretty close to the same place. But the Red Sox obviously on their way down and the Astros are on their way up. So it's kind of, well, theoretically. And what I mean by that, more so than, I don't necessarily think the Astros are going to be good next year, but just from the standpoint of the Red Sox, they won a World Series last year. They've had kind of that same core for the last, you know, 7-8 years or so. It's not quite the same team that won the World Series in 04, but the one then 07 and then last year, you know, there's a lot of that core is still there. And so that's when they kind of started selling off those pieces now, like we were talking about. And those guys are getting older. And I think they're getting ready for a big, either, you know, big spending spree in the offseason or a big retool. Who knows? James Shields could be a Red Sox next year. Who knows? But yeah, that's actually a good, I didn't even think about it before, but that's actually probably a good spot for him. Anyway, but then the Astros are kind of the opposite. You know, they're a younger team that's got a ton of talent, but just unproven, unexperienced. And my point behind all this is that, I don't know, for me, even as bad as the Astros have been the last few years, it's almost more understandable now because this is the first year they've really started pulling up talent from their deep farm system. So it's almost more understandable to me to see them lose to the Astros, because when you have a really young team like that, you can put something together and you can be hot for 3 or 4 games. It's not going to sustain over the season, and they're going to have lots of losing streaks because something's going to go wrong with a player and it's going to take them a while to figure it out, you know. But you're going to have George Springer go on a hot streak where he hits 8 home runs in 5 games.
Which and, the Royals which ran is, right into.
Exactly. So that's the kind of thing that you see with a younger team that, you know, makes them a little bit more streaky, unpredictable. So it's like, okay, well, you know, the Royals should still beat them, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, when you kind of run into a situation like that, I'm like, okay, you know, you can at least understand where it's coming from because the team is developing, starting to, just like the Royals maybe 3 years ago. You know, every once in a while they'd take a series from a good team, they'd sweep a good team, and it's like, okay, that's what we want. You know, that's what we're looking for. And it just eventually kind of snowballs. And, well, you know, but the Red Sox, it's just a little bit harder to see that argument. Because they're just not playing good baseball. They basically, when you watch them with the eye test, it looks to me like they've kind of mailed it in almost, especially someone like a David Ortiz. I mean, this guy's been around the block so many damn times. He's won the World Series 3 times. You know, he's just playing out. He's probably just, you know, collecting his final paychecks so he can ride off into the sunset. Hell, I would. But anyway, I mean, so it's a little more disconcerting, especially at this point in the season, to see the Royals lose to a team like the Red Sox when all these games are so important. And the Red Sox just don't really seem like they're fully there and still just destroying Aaron Crow for no good reason, just violently ending his dreams. that will haunt. I mean, we'll get to that in a second, but I mean, are you kind of with me on that, or am I just talking out my, you know what?
Well, I mean, the Red Sox have a couple of young guys, but they're not, you know, they haven't been touted nearly as much as the Astros, and they still have,
I mean, they've
guys.
Got like Xander Bogaerts and Jackie Bradley Jr.
and Will Betts Middlebrooks and
Mookie Betts had a huge series. That's part of why they,
yeah. Christian Vasquez and others. But I mean, they also have guys like, you know, Clay Buchholz, who hasn't pitched for crap all year, comes out and owns the Royals, and Alan Webster, who's been awful, and comes out and owns the Royals. And it's just like, you got to be better than that. And the thing is, they were in a couple of those games, but you know, they kicked the ball around the field, and we'll talk about to what extent. I'm sure if you've been watching, you've seen the problem, but we've got, you know, the actual like game by game, just to kind of review things. It's been crazy, you know, that they played so poorly. And when you're a team like the Royals, you go up against a team like the Red Sox, yeah, maybe their hitting won't be there, because their hitting's kind of only been there for, you know, that 10 game stretch in June, and then you know, throughout the big run in July and August, you know, and for the most part it's been pretty pedestrian, but which is ironic because they don't walk. But the you know, they just haven't been good. I mean, you look up and down the lineup as far as like some of the regulars, there's only like three guys who've been swinging above average, and some of the guys like Escobar and Sal Perez and Omar Infante have been just miserable. Like, they're not getting on base, they're not hitting for power. It's like you said, there's no margin for error. You know, the Royals are all in as a pitching and defense team, and the pitching hasn't quite been there, and the defense hasn't quite been there. And when you combine that with the same offensive problems that we've talked about on base, power, things like that, that's a problem. And that's, you know, they're actually really fortunate to be 7-6 in this month. Rather than even worse than that. I mean, they won those two games against the Yankees, 1-0 and 2-0, and none of those runs were earned, which I think it's like the first time since 79 or something that they won two games just on unearned runs. I'm not sure if that's the right stat or a series or something.
It's something ridiculous.
But it's ridiculous. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, there is some kind of special force doing something that's, you know, has them fated to make the playoffs. That's the kind of thing, because they sure as heck weren't going to score those runs on their own. So no. It took, you know, the other team committing errors to go out and put the runs on the board for them. And they just happened to shut out the team at the same time, which, you know, credit to James Shields and Yordano Ventura for those games, but you know, you got to get something from the offense for those days where, you know, Ventura didn't pitch a great game his last time out and gave up some runs. And, you know, the other game in that Yankees series was the Duffy game, where he left after one pitch. And, you know, that was still a fairly winnable game. The you know, they didn't play, you know, Hendricks' line wasn't bad, and the rest of the bullpen kind of ate it up. But, you know, you can still score some runs. And, you know, unless the other
team is allowed, yes.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're scoring, you know, giving up 8, 9, 10 runs, you know, you're still kind of within it. And the Royals just haven't been able to do that until kind of recently. They seem like they're getting on base a little better. But, you know, still, you can't go and let Boston come in and take 3 out of 4 at home in your last homestand. You got to, that's your opportunity to make the statement that, okay, we're going to beat the teams we're supposed to beat. And when you consider that the White Sox are 7 of the last 13/14 games of the schedule, that's a team they need to beat. And they probably need to win 5 out of 7 of those at least at this stage, because otherwise it's Detroit, it's Cleveland, and it's that resuming that suspended game. And none of those games are going to be easy. So their opportunities against Chicago. And if they come out and they play like they did against Boston and overlook a team that's really not playing for anything, well, you know, then I don't know if they deserve the playoffs.
Yeah, no, they have to win, like you said, 5 out of 7. They have to win 2 out of 3 from Detroit at the very least if they want any shot at this division. And if the Royals are really going to go out and make a statement, they need to just sweep the Tigers. And then that probably puts them back into first place, unless things go horribly awry in the next few days. Hopefully, right. Hopefully not, but that would probably put them back into first place, and they'd be sitting pretty with, what, 7 games to go? So, I mean, yeah. That's it right there. Now, our good friend David Leske at the Pine Tar Press podcast, you know, we talk with him back and forth in emails as we've discussed before.
Is he really that good of a friend? I mean, is he really...
You know, I try and be polite on the air.
Okay, that's a good point.
We'll call David Leske the Butters of our Mike's Stan and myself's Kyle, I guess. But anyway,
does that make Troy Hartman or Kenny?
We're gonna leave that. We're just gonna leave.
I guess
that
he's not. He's
there.
Not on the show, so I guess he gets to be Kenny.
That's true.
Yeah.
This is one of the episodes where he's been killed off, but don't worry, he'll be back at some point, I'm sure.
Sorry, Troy. Yeah, that's a lot more apt than anyway.
But David Leske, he's tried to convince us that he thinks there's one more real legit offensive run ready for this team. Like that 10-game winning streak earlier in the season, like the 24 out of 30 stretch where they're just, you know, things just click, and then they storm back and take the division. Now, I am not exactly sold, and I think, Mike, you're kind of with me on that. And I just the biggest reason for me, and tell me if you agree with this or if you think there's another reason, but for me, the biggest issue why I don't have necessarily any confidence that the Royals won't win the division or that they won't win the game, or sorry, that they won't win games, but just that they won't kind of go on a tear. But the reason I'm not super confident in that idea is I honestly think they're lucky to have had the streaks and the tears that they've had so far this season. And when you really kind of bunch them all together, I mean, how many games, if you talk about being on offensively, I mean, 50, maybe 60 games this season that the Royals have been really, you know, looking good offensively. And considering how poor this roster has been on the overall, and when you look at their stats, I mean, then that obviously has to show you how bad they've been in the other 80 games or whatever it is. But, I mean, it just seems like they've kind of tapped themselves out in terms of the going on any sort of a run with offensively. I just – at this point in the season – not that you can't get hot, obviously, yeah. But I just, this particular team, to me, I don't know that I look at them and say, oh man, they're just, you know, a couple good swings and a couple from breaking out like I would maybe, you know, the Tigers lineup or, you know, maybe the, hell, I don't know, you know, just another, maybe the Indians lineup or something. You know, I just don't look at the Royals that way. I mean, where do you... You feel something similar? Is it different for you for as far as your confidence on that?
I've said in the past and on Twitter and I think on here and, you know, in our email that I do think that there's one more push offensively. Now, I'm not thinking, you know, scoring 6 runs a game. You know, I'm just thinking they'll rebound and be around 4-ish runs a game. You know, but it is tough because, you know, throughout the whole season, they've had guys like Omar Infante batting second. And so he's getting second most plate appearances, and right now he's not hitting anything. You know, even this month, he leads the team in plate appearances. So you know, you're looking at the most important month in the last 29 years, and you've got a guy like Infante who's, you know, got his shoulders hurting him. It's the end of a long season. You know, he hasn't always been a full-time player. And so, you know, he's batting second all the time. You look at it, his isolated power is .019 in September. So he probably has like one double versus, you know, a bunch of singles. You know, they did get Eric Hosmer back, and he's kind of hit better. You know, he has a couple homers, so maybe he's heating up. Lorenzo Cain all year has just been hitting the ball. And you know, he's added a triple, and he had that inside the park home run. So there's that, but the thing with this team and the way that they score runs, there's not one guy in the lineup. And I've brought this up for months. there's not one guy on the Royals that teams are going to be afraid of. It's, you know, Cleveland, they have Carlos Santana. He can carry that team for, you know, 3 weeks at a time if he needs to. Yep. Jason Kipnis last year was really good. Lonnie Chisenhall was really good in the first half. But you look at Detroit, you got Miguel Cabrera, he got hot. JD Martinez has been, I don't know what corners he went to on a country road to sell his soul for this season, but my goodness, he's been, every time you look, he's doing something. He had a big 3-run homer, I think, in Cleveland to win a game. He's hit probably 39 home runs against the Royals alone in about 12 games. My math might
that
be
might be a
that.
Little shallow, but yeah. You know, it's somewhere in that range.
It's around there, but you know, those guys can carry a lineup. You look at even Seattle, they've kind of gotten some from Kendrys Morales a little bit, and you know, Kyle Seager's been good there.
Obviously, Robbie Cano.
Oh yeah, you know, I keep thinking he's a Yankee. It's weird. My bad. Sorry, Robbie Cano. But the Royals don't have that. The closest they've really had is Alex Gordon, and he's cooled off in the last couple weeks too.
Yeah, he had that 2 week stretch where he was the MVP talk.
He was MVP. Yeah, he was the best player in the division at that point.
He was the best player in the league for those 2 weeks. I'm confident in saying that. For the whole season, no, but I'll give him those 2 weeks.
Yeah. And he's been walking. He's been getting on base, so even though he hasn't been getting hits, he's at least contributing that way, and you see he leads the team in runs scored in September. So there's that, and you know, guys like Nori Aoki has hit well. So you know, if you get this team, it really requires everybody to kind of be on at the same time. Josh Willingham has been hurt for various things. They're still figuring out how the heck they want to work with Willingham, Hosmer, and Butler at the same time. Butler's hardly been in the lineup. He hasn't been hitting. So, you know, you basically need to get six out of those nine guys in the lineup clicking, and they've got to be able to put it together for a couple innings in a game. And then you've got to carry it on to the next game and the next game and the next game and the next game. And they did that in June, and they did that in July and most of August. But it hasn't – that there's a lot of moving parts there that they have to get going at the same time, and it is tough to do that. And when – you know, those guys are Mike Moustakas, who is notable for the horrible plate approach, and Sal Perez, who hasn't walked since maybe May.
June.
Yeah, I don't even know. And Infante, who hasn't walked hardly at all. And, you know, I'm not saying that they have to walk to be productive, but I'm saying that walks are often a product of a good approach. And these guys aren't swinging at good pitches because they're getting out early in the at bat because they're not being patient. And, you know, that's top down, you know, top to bottom in the lineup. So that's going to be really difficult for this team to kind of get things going over the next 13 plus games. But I do think that they can kind of do it. They have been getting on base more the last week. Hosmer has a couple homers. You know, there's opportunity there, but it's going to take a lot working together.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't even necessarily have to be that, you know, you said six out of the nine players, you know, like they don't even have to be setting the world on fire, especially if you can get just get to the point where there's no holes in the lineup. You know, like earlier in the season when they really had it going, not only did they have, you know, Butler, Gordon, and everybody else going, you know, for the meat of the lineup, but then you were also getting production from Jerod Dyson and Alcides Escobar and those guys that were, you know, they're looking awful right now, but there was a point in the season where they were coming through in some big spots. So I mean, if you can get that, you know, it's just, so they've got a couple, like you said, they've got, there's some areas there where they can make it happen. It's just a matter of doing it. And to this point, you know, the last 2 weeks or so, they've started to raise that kind of Royals fan doubt on whether or not they can actually make it, get it done. So,
it's reasonable to be skeptical, and you know, when there's other things, you know, the pitching has been iffy. Guthrie had a rough start. Vargas wasn't great yesterday. Hendricks got roughed up, and he's going again. Duffy, though, is supposedly healthy. They're just trying to get him back.
I'm on board with that. I think Hendricks, his last game wasn't as bad as it might seem when you look at the stat line. He got in a little
bad inning.
Yeah, he had the one bad inning. He got in a little trouble, and I believe there was an error that inning by either, was it Butler or Hosmer or somebody.
Well,
And
in September, you can pretty much throw a dart and hit an inning where the Royals had an
yes.
error, basically.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
But for that game, there was, I believe there was an error that got that allowed maybe two runs to eventually score, and things kind of snowballed from there, and he just wasn't didn't have it after that. But I'm still confident he can give a workable start. It's whether or not the offense can come up and help him with it. But to revisit the Boston series, not necessarily the series itself, but specifically last night, Mike, let's run this down because this is important because this is going to talk about the Royals as a whole moving forward. These final, what is it, would you say 13 games they have left? However many it is, 13, 14, somewhere there.
Yeah, 13 with an
So,
asterisk.
yeah,
Yeah.
12.01 games or whatever.
Well, it's 13 and
Oh,
then the
13
suspended
plus
game.
this is okay, so
Yeah.
13.01. But
Oh yeah, and last week I think we were trying to pick out like the actual games left and stuff, and I was looking at Baseball Reference and like they already have that Cleveland suspended game credited as a loss.
oh, really?
So their numbers are off. It must just be a programming thing for them
Yeah, it's
to
probably
display
hard
it.
to, yeah.
So I was going off of the wrong number of games.
Oh, no big deal. It
Anyway.
happens. But anyway, we're going to talk about last night. Okay, we're as Mike said earlier, where this is September 15th, that we're recording this. So last night, the Royals lost the third or the fourth game of the Boston Red Sox series. The third game of that series was that they lost. What happened was, let's see. Correct me if I'm forgetting. I wasn't able to watch the game. I was running a lot of errands yesterday, and the Chiefs game coincided with it a little bit. But see if I've got the flow of events correctly here, where Royals had captured the lead 4-3.
So Vargas opens the sixth, gives up two singles right away. They leave him in. He faces Ortiz, gets him out, moves the runners up, and then Yost goes to Aaron Crow, and they've got Cespedes up there. He's a righty. They're not going to pinch hit for him. So okay, righty's all right, but this is also you're protecting a one run lead. And right away, Aaron Crow ends up going full, and he walks Yoenis Cespedes. The next guy he strikes out, Alan Craig, again goes to a full count. And then, as it comes down, you got two outs and you've got Daniel Nava coming up to the plate. Nava's a switch hitter. And if you look at his splits, he's a lot better hitting from the left-handed side than he is the right-handed side. And Aaron Crow being a righty, that's going to put Nava batting left-handed, which is his strength. So at that stage, Yost had some options, and they were leave Crow in and have Nava hit left-handed. He could bring in a lefty, which might have gotten a pinch hitter, but I think Napoli was available to pinch hit. They may have done that. Probably with Nava's splits, they probably would have done that. Or he could have went to another reliever, even a right-hander. Perhaps Wade Davis, who hasn't given up a home run all year and strikes out everybody, or perhaps Kelvin Herrera, who strikes out everybody as well and hasn't given up, I think he's given up like one run since June. Could go to those guys, or you could stay with Aaron Crow, who, as many have pointed out, was dropped to Double A in the middle of August because he was giving up home runs. So Yost stayed with Aaron Crow, and Daniel Nava hit a grand slam, and the
Oh,
Royals
yes.
lost 8-4.
They went from up 4-3 to down 7-4, and they gave up another run, probably just because they were so dejected. Anyway, but
To hell with
so
it.
there were two important things that came out of Ned Yost's response, both of which make you understand a little bit, at least me, why someone like a Ned Yost can be fired in September in a pennant race. And one of which is overmanaging, and one of which, or the second one, I think, is just a boneheaded move. The first one that I think is overmanaging is one of the responses Ned Yost gave was that He put Ned Yost in because he assumed, I'm sorry, Ned Yost. He put Aaron Crow in because he assumed Napoli was going to be pinch hitting. So that doesn't make sense to me that you would just put somebody in basically assuming they're going to make the move. Why don't you force them to make the move and then bring in the new pitcher? I mean, right. I guess, and that, I mean.
Well, and if you remember the previous Boston series, they had that spot where he brought in Scott Downs to face Jackie Bradley Jr., who, mm-hmm. you know, isn't really a good hitter right now at this point in his career. No. And they ended up pinch hitting Johnny Gomes. Johnny Gomes hits a 3-run homer. Red Sox win the game. And Yost didn't even see it coming. So that was probably in the back of his mind, too, that he was anticipating the pinch hitter this time. And again, outthought himself.
Yeah. And so that's number one. And then number two comes in a follow-up question of, okay, once you saw that Nava was still in there and they weren't going to pinch hit Napoli, why didn't you bring in somebody like a Kelvin Herrera, who, as you just said, Mike, is striking out everybody and hasn't given up a run in 30 innings or whatever it is? So to which his response was, it was the sixth inning. The sixth inning belongs to Aaron Crow, and the seventh inning belongs to Kelvin Herrera. So besides the fact that that juvenile logic is just painful to my ears, he went further to say it was so frustrating. This is Ned Yost talking. It was frustrating because we were one out away from bringing Kelvin Herrera in the game. I'm just going to let that sink in because
you are allowed.
I don't understand how, as a major league baseball man, and not even that, just as a grown human being, Ned Yost can say, how do you draw this line in? And I don't know where this comes from, you know, where he says, okay, I get the idea of possibly it's like sticking to a game plan in football, right? Where, you know, you're running the ball, and it's three and out. You're not getting any traction whatsoever in the run game. And they're stacking the box. They're daring you to pass and you just don't, you know, it's running. Like, yeah, you're the coach that after the game is going to be, why the hell did you keep running the ball? Why didn't you try and do something else? And in this case, with as good as Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis have been, it'd be like, not only are you running the ball that unsuccessfully, but you're doing it with Peyton Manning and all the Broncos wide receivers, or Aaron Rodgers and all the Packers wide receivers at your disposal, and you're just choosing not to use them and doing this other thing that's not work. Or I guess I shouldn't say not working, because at the time when Crow was left in, it wasn't working, but just something that, you know, was not a good matchup. And so I don't understand where this comes from, where he just draws this figurative line and says, I'm not going to move. I'm not going to cross this line. And that's where it is. And it just seems to me such a strange concept to pigeonhole yourself into not allowing the game to dictate how you actually use your players.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all, because it's like you said, he has these guys at his disposal. You know, if a fan says, well, that's frustrating because we couldn't get Kelvin Herrera in there, that's understandable because the fan wants Kelvin Herrera in there. Ned Yost
and
has
the fan
that
has no control over it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Ned Yost has every ounce of influence on that decision. And I know they generally haven't asked their relievers to get one out, sit, and go back out there. But, you know, for someone like Herrera, who's thrown like five games this month, you know, he can generally handle it. They've had a number of times where a guy will come in, get one out, three pitches, and they replace him the next inning.
Or one pitch even.
Yeah. And it's just like, I get it. But, I mean, you're right there. You're nine outs away from being able to close it out, or 10 outs away, rather. What's one more? Using guys that you have seen come in and basically be untouchable. You know, what's one more? You know, they, I think they can handle it. And if they really can't, then I don't know. It's such a strange thing. And you know, this would never happen in the '80s, you know, just
no,
never.
That's the thing that's most interesting to me about it is we have sat here and said that Ned Yost and the Royals baseball philosophy is basically stuck in the '70s, except in this one area, literally the only area that they don't play like it's 1975 baseball is in how they use their bullpen, because not only do they not use relievers like that to get four outs or even five, or God forbid go two innings, you know, not only do they not do that, but they go even as far as to not even consider thinking about asking their relievers to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and maybe there's something to be said for coming in and saying, hey, you guys, we're going to need you tonight. We're going to need you every night. Just be ready. I want you ready for one inning, and that's it. That's all I'm ever going to ask of you is one inning. And so maybe that's what Ned says to his guys, and he wants to be loyal to him and doesn't want to put him in that position where, hey, I know I said I only needed one, but can you get me one and two thirds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
and they'll do it.
Exactly. At the same time, you know, these guys are professionals, and whatever Ned tells them or whatever they've been told about what their role is, it don't matter, right? You're in a playoff chase. You've mm-hmm. only got 2 weeks left in the season, roughly, you know, 3 weeks. You need to do what you need to do to help this team win. And if I cannot possibly imagine any player on this roster pushing back to Ned and saying, I don't want to be out there for four outs.
Right.
But if that's happening, that needs to stop. But I imagine it's more Ned trying to protect these guys, and you can't. You have to go out and you have to place that expectation on them. And it's something we've talked about before on this show with a team like the Cardinals, when they just bring guys out and they seem to have success, and you know, other teams like you know, the Rays, not so much this year, but the Rays in the past, and other teams where you bring these young kids up and they have success. It's like, well, you know, at some point you have to stop coddling them, and you have to expect them to do what you need them to do. And that's what needed to happen last night. And Ned Yost and the Royals failed.
And there's a tweet from Jeff Passan from earlier today. It says, still not sure how the sixth inning is Aaron Crows. He's pitched in 64 games this season. He appeared in the sixth inning in just nine of them. So, you know, there's that. The other thing is they had Jason Frazier available. They had Brandon Finnegan available, who all he's done is get every single guy out, including Carlos Beltran and Mark Teixeira and David Ortiz and Derek Jeter and Jacoby Ellsbury. He's basically gotten an all-star lineup out, and they didn't bring him in against a guy that would have had to flip over to the right side, which would have been his weaker side. I mean, it was tailor-made for the kid. And I understand that he's, you know, brand new to the league, but goodness, he doesn't seem to be phased by it right now. So why would one more batter do it? I don't see it, especially when Crow has been so bad and has given up so many big home runs. He's given him like nine homers this year. He's a reliever. So
yeah,
it's just not acceptable.
No, and I mean, Finnegan was pitching in the College World Series just like 2 months ago. Not to say that the College World Series is in any way comparable, excuse me, to the stress of an MLB playoff chase. But point being, you know, it's still a high pressure, stressful situation. So coming from that to this is at least from a, you know, internal dealing with the pressure standpoint, at least more of a comparable situation than Aaron Crow, who I'm not sure if he's ever pitched in a season like this, let alone down in the playoff chase right now, because I don't know if MU ever made the College World Series in his time there or how far they would have went. And ever since he's been on the Royals, they haven't been in this situation. So, you know, he may have never pitched in a situation like this, whereas someone like Finnegan just came from a high-pressure situation. So, you know, it's there were – and it wasn't just Herrera either, you know, like we're saying with – like you just said, you know, there's these other options. And just, again, there's nothing else to say besides Ned Yost failed. And it's a question of how does this affect the team going forward? You know, to his credit, I saw a quote today that he himself said that he will consider using Herrera, Holland, and Davis for more than one inning moving forward. So, hey, you know, if he came in and he drew that figurative line in the sand and it blew up in his face last night and he's learned from it, then more power to him. You know, I'll believe it when I see it, but if that's what actually happens and he does do that and it ends up helping them win games, then absolutely, you know, I will retract. Well, I don't know if I'll retract because he should have learned this 20 years ago. But beside that, you know, I mean, I'll at least give him credit for learning from his mistake, even if it's hopefully it's not too little too late. But, you know, but all the same, like, you know, those are the kinds of things that a manager does to where you're going to say, hey, I know we're in a playoff race in Milwaukee in 2008, but you got to go, man, because this ain't cutting it, you know. So hopefully he doesn't torpedo the rest of this Royal season here.
You can definitely see why they fired him back then. And it's, yeah, I think today's actually like the 6-year anniversary of that, too.
Yeah, I was going to say it's getting close.
Which is just crazy. But
kind of weird. But
I don't know. It just reminds me of a couple years ago they did the digital digester. I don't remember what they called it. It was the precursor to Blog to the K back before 2011. And
oh, yeah.
So a bunch of us bloggers were talking to Ned Yost, and somebody asked him, you know, at that point, Soria was the closer, and they're like, have you ever thought about, you know, bringing in Soria for more than just one inning to get a save, like a tight situation in the eighth? And he said, you know, that idea makes a heck of a lot of sense, but you're not going to see me try it. And I think it's just baseball orthodoxy says you don't do it that way. And the first manager to try to do it that way runs the risk of failing. And then they're next on the line because they have tried to do something different from what was established, you know, in like 88-89 when Tony La Russa specialized the bullpen and kind of set up this one inning closer role. And so, I mean, and that's the worst reason to make a decision. And he didn't say that, okay, if I do this, I'm going to, you know, and it fails, I could lose my job, but it's pretty clear. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of the background that he brings. And, you know, that makes sense. It seems it fits his character. That's how he's managed in the past, and that's how he manages today, and that's who he is.
Yeah, and the flip side to that is the trendsetter. Like you said, Tony La Russa kind of set this trend in motion that's now baseball gospel. Well, and you also have someone in Tampa Bay and Joe Maddon who was employing, you know, starting a couple of years ago, these just wild shifts on defense. And everybody was like, this guy's crazy. What the hell are they doing? And, oh, hey, guess what? They're winning baseball games is what they're doing. And now
everybody's
doing these crazy shifts, Royals included. And they're saying that's a large reason why offenses dip now, because they're all these shifts are playing into hitter strengths. Like, oh my God, maybe we should actually adjust to, you know, what's happening in the game and to people's tendencies, that we have all this data showing us what's going to happen, you know, on a 60% chance, but, you know, we're actually not going to ignore it. So it is kind of interesting to hear you recount that story, because it goes that way in football too, because the Chiefs were in a situation last night where they were down by a touchdown. They were inside the 5-yard line, and had they scored, people were saying, well, should they go for two? And it's like, you see coaches do it every once in a while, but that's one of those things where, you know, very few coaches want to be the coach that does that, because if it doesn't, then you basically lose the game straight away, and it's over, and you're the GOAT. And that's your decision. There's nothing you can do. You know, you've got to take that as a coach. But, you know, if you play the odds and you stick with it and you do it, you know, more often than not, you're probably going to come out right.
Yeah, but it's like fourth and short that has a pretty high success rate.
Yeah,
and coaches don't do it. They'll get to the other team's 40, they'll be fourth and inches, and they'll punt it. And it's just like, you could just go for it.
Yeah, and they're ignoring data at their disposal, which is similar to what Ned does on a consistent basis. Last night included. So, Anyway, with that, we're going to go and take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the Royals' exemplary defenses difficulties that they've had over the last month or so, and how all this that we've talked about portends to the Royals' playoff chances going forward. So stick with us on the break, and we'll bring you back with that on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. And as you heard on the lead-in there from the wonderful Michael Engel Library of Music, we're going to talk about the Royals and what they've been doing recently, which is, suffice it to say, crapping all over themselves on the defense. Is that, I mean, is that too harsh, or is that, should I scale that back a little bit?
I think peeing down their leg would also apply.
That's an acceptable substitute.
Cowering in the corner, maybe. Yeah.
Tail between their legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Things
of this nature. Point, for those that are metaphorically challenged, what we're getting at here is the Royals in one of the most important stretches of the season, and the thing that they've hung their hat on the most of their defense has been failing them. Do we have, Mike, were you able to pull up those numbers of their errors? And you said how many in the last 13 games? This is the Royals, one of the best defenses in the American League. Mike, how many errors have they had in the last 13 games?
This is from the full month of September. So from September 1st to today, before the first game of the White Sox series, 13 games played, they've committed 16 errors.
Good Lord, that's more than one a game.
That's more than one a game. There are three games in this stretch where they did not give up an error. Two of those three they did win. Like I said before, they were pretty fortunate to be 7-6 in that stretch, because there are a lot of those games they really should not have won. And, you know, it's a problem, because this is the crunch time. And like we said before, there's no room for error. Literally, there's no room for error. Yes. They can't make these mistakes. They can't have these problems. And some of them are, you know, routine things to first, where Eric Hosmer's made mistakes. They're throwing errors. They're, you know, Escobar's muffed a couple of easy ones. These are problems that are coming at the absolute worst time, and from guys that have usually been pretty solid. And it's like we said before, it's a team built on pitching and defense. The hitting you can't rely on. The pitching and defense has gotten them to this point. Now it's failing them. And I don't know if it's a long season, they're getting tired, that's taking their focus away. I don't know if they're playing really tight, because it is, you know, last year this time they were still chasing. They were being chased this time. That could be a factor in it. It could just be crazy luck and just bad luck that it's happening now and hadn't happened before. But from April to August, the Royals committed 81 errors, according to Fangraphs, adding the 16. You know, and that's 16 a month on average for that. So they've committed basically their month's allotment of errors in the first 13 games of September with another 13/14 to go. Just unacceptable. In that time, you know, the Royals have scored 41 runs in those 13 games, which is low. It's just over three per game. But they'd only given up 43 runs as well. And considering that eight of those runs are unearned, you can see how big of a difference those errors have made. You know, that's about 20% of the runs allowed were unearned. That is a result of these errors. So, you know, that combined with a bad offense, and it's a bad recipe, and that's why the Royals aren't in first place now.
Yeah, I mean, if you extrapolate 16 errors over 13 games, extrapolate that over an entire season, you're looking at 199 errors. And I know this is a bad stretch, and that's just wouldn't happen. But to put that into perspective, the Houston Astros, a team that lost, what did they lose, like 110 games last year or something ridiculous?
A lot of games.
I mean, they had 125 errors, and they led the league, you know, by 4 or 5. So I'll get the exact number here. They led the league by 4 over the White Sox, and then the closest after that was 114. So, and the Royals only had 85 errors last year for the whole season. So it's something where, you know, obviously it's you don't want to say just a bad stretch, because you don't want to try and downplay the fact that it's a very bad stretch and a very important part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, like you said, there's no excuse. It can't continue. And it's back to that idea of the Royals constructed this team to have a slim margin for error, and they assumed it was all going on the other side and falling in the Royals' way. And it did for a long period of time, a couple points in this season. But lately, specifically with the errors, the margin of error, figurative one, mm-hmm. leading to real errors in the field, has led to a lot of losses. And they need to figure out how to fix this.
Yeah, and Yost has said that it's not a pressure thing, that it's not a focus thing, and that's what you would expect him to say. And I don't know what it is. It's some of these are plays that you've seen them make all year, and there shouldn't be an issue. But it's also happened at the worst times. It's extended innings. It's happened with runners on, and that's how you end up giving up runs. And what I found interesting is kind of looking at it, and this is, you know, it's arbitrary endpoints, because I just picked, you know, and just looked over September. But of those 16 errors, 4 are by Mike Moustakas, 4 are by Eric Hosmer. And right there, that's a problem. But, you know, the others, you know, Sal Perez has 2 errors. Omar Infante has 2 errors. Escobar has 2 errors. Christian Colon has 1 error. Gerard Dyson has 1 error. And that's your 16. The obvious pattern you can see there is that these are all the infielders. They're probably going to get more chances to commit errors, but they need to make those plays. So the more routine plays are going to be to the infielders. And so they're making these mistakes. And again, at the absolute worst time.
Yeah. And we talked about the margin for error that the fielding errors are not helping with. But then you compound that with things like Ned Yost making boneheaded decisions like he did last night, Gerard Dyson being an idiot on the base paths,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I'm not saying he cost him a game, but he cost him a chance at tying that game up and or going on to win it. So, you know, it's bad enough that you may, you know, Hosmer may kick a ball off his glove and let 2 runs score, but it's even worse when that happens and then you're in position to possibly score and get one of those runs back, and Gerard Dyson makes a bad move on the base paths and gets picked off, and, you know, basically, and the game's over. So the Royals are definitely not making it easy on themselves, and they're, I don't necessarily know that it's pressure necessarily, but I would definitely listen to that argument, specifically because, I mean, we've seen this team buckle under pressure before. The Our Time fiasco was bad, and you would think they've grown and matured beyond that, and they have for the most part, but, you know, they've never been in this situation before. There's a lot of pressure from this city and this fan base to get this team into the playoffs, and I just, you know, I'm not going to blame it on the pressure, but I'll listen to that argument if that's what you're going to try and tell me about why these things are happening.
I can understand it because, you know, they haven't really been in this spot before for the most part. I mean, guys like Shields and Infante have been there. Ibanez is there, and, you know, he's not really contributing on the field, but he's kind of, you know, he's been there a little bit. Jason Frazier's been on some good teams. Wade Davis has been on some of those Tampa teams. But for the most part, I mean, a lot of the guys, Ventura, Duffy, you know, Moustakas, Hosmer, Escobar, they haven't really been in this kind of situation. Gordon, you know, the majority of these guys, you know, their experience in a playoff race was last year, which they were in it, but they weren't really in it. You know, there wasn't a lot of pressure on them. They had, like, none of the pressure to go out and hold anything. They were chasing the whole time. And that's a whole different thing when you're being hunted versus doing the hunting. And, you know, when you're on the top of the mountain, you got to, you know, everybody's giving you their shot. It's troubling to see that because these are also the guys that we expect to be in that big window that's going to be the dynasty. I think also, you know, I think we're kind of above that now because we see what guys like Hosmer and Moustakas really are and et cetera, et cetera. But still, you know, you would think that they would respond a lot more professionally, I guess, or effectively than they have. And, you know, guys like Ventura has thrown pretty well. The bullpen guys have still been nails. That's encouraging at least, but, you know, this is the time to step it up, and guys aren't stepping it up, and that's concerning and for this year and beyond.
You also have to wonder, you know, we've talked about when we had Mellinger on this show earlier in the season, you also have to wonder if this is maybe one of those irrational confidence scenarios, because the Royals are very good at taking credit for doing nothing and trying to make it seem like, you know, they've done this great thing. Well, you know, for an example, don't have to go any further than last year, Dayton Moore. Well, it kind of feels like we won the World Series, even though they didn't win anything except for 86 games, no playoffs, no nothing. So they're very good at trying to project that air of, hey, we've accomplished a lot. Well, they have accomplished things in their tenure here. There's still nothing of note, you know?
Right.
So, point being, I don't necessarily think this is it because I haven't been getting as much of that feeling lately as I did, you know, previously, even previously in this season. But it could be one of those scenarios because, you know, Mellinger, who's around the team a lot, he kind of agreed with us that the team does have this sort of weird cockiness that's undeserved. So I don't know if that might have something to do with it, but who knows? Maybe it does.
Going well, and they're in like, how are we not winning?
They just kind of say, oh, the Red Sox suck. We're the Royals. We're in first place now. We're going to take 3 out of 4 of this, all 4 games, and it'll be that. You know, that'll be the end of it. But nope, this is Major League Baseball. You got to come out to play every day. So not necessarily saying that's going to happen, but again, that's another argument. If you wanted to bring that to me, I'd listen to you. But the biggest question here, and we'll finish with this, is how does all of this play into the Royals' playoff chances? And we'll just throw some numbers out here. Okay, so looking at Baseball Prospectus here, they have their playoff odds that they recalculate every day based on all the wins of all the teams and all the scenarios and everything else. Well, as of right now, the Royals' playoff percentage, let's see, the Royals' playoff percentage is 64.9%. That's just winning the division, wild card, anything at all. Whereas, you know, you've got the Angels are at 100%.
Yeah.
The Athletics are at 98.5%. The Tigers are at 96.8%. The Mariners are at 31%. The Orioles are at 100%. I think they've already won the division.
I think their magic number is like 3.
But, yeah, it's, I mean, it's pretty insane. They've got a 12-game lead with 14 to play.
Yeah. It's,
so they've got to, or no, how many do they have? They have... They've got 13 games left to play, so they would literally have to lose every single one of them. And let's see, the Blue Jays would have to win every single one of them. So
that's not happening.
Yeah. So the Orioles are in the playoffs, and same deal with the Angels. They have a 10-game lead over the A's, who are the best team in baseball for 3/4 of the season until the Angels have gone on this ridiculous tear.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then let's click on over to FanGraphs. And you look at that, and FanGraphs has the Royals' playoff percentage as they have the percentage of winning the division at 25.1% chance, and then they have percentage of the wild card at 41.6%. And the chances of the playoffs in general, 66.8%. So that 66.8 compared to baseball prospectuses, 64.9, 3% standard deviations, all that. So, I mean, pretty much the same, better than coin toss chance of making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it was like 80% a week ago.
Yeah. So. And that was not, I mean, that was, and their division was like 60%, I think, or right. something. But, I mean, for me, it's, and I said this in our email chain today, I still think that the Royals would have to screw up pretty hard to not make the playoffs. However, mm-hmm. I'm a Royals fan, and I fully expect them to do everything in their power to prove me wrong on that. Or I should say to prove me right, because they would have to screw up really bad. And the thing that just strikes fear into my heart is our first ever live show at Kelly's Westport Inn 3 years ago in 2011. What was that? Like, that was one of the most fun days of baseball in my life.
Yeah, that was that last day.
Yep, where like 3 teams clinched a playoff berth on the last day that were out of it before like, that day began.
And
it
was two were Braves, walk-offs, I think.
Yeah, it was the Braves and the Rays, and that was Boston's epic collapse that got Terry Francona fired.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, we were all there, and it was just like one after another. All these games are going crazy. People were hitting home runs and all this stuff. Where was I going with that?
It's that time of year. I mean, it's 13-game stretch. Anything can happen. You look at the Indians last year, they won their last 10 games to make it into the second wild card.
Yeah. Oh, the where I was going with that was the collapse of Boston, where they were, I mean, they had like a 7-game lead with 10 to play or whatever, and they missed the playoffs. So I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something bad like that. And, you know, the Royals could be that team, unfortunately. I hope they're not. But everything in my Kansas City sports bones is telling me not to get excited about this because, you know, I remember, just to kind of put it into a little perspective, I'm sitting there in the Chiefs playoff game last year. They're up 38-10 in the third quarter, right? If they've lost, it would be the second greatest comeback in playoff history. And I turned to my dad and I was like, oh man, Dad, I've got a bad feeling about this. And then they scored a touchdown like right away, almost after I said that. Or maybe I said it right after the touchdown. I can't remember, but I was just like, oh man. And my then girlfriend, now wife at the time, she said, what are you guys so nervous about? They're totally going to win this game. And I was like, you do not understand. You do not understand what we've been through with Lynn Elliott and John Elway and everything else. And, you know, this could easily swing back the other way. What do you know? Boom, it's over. Chiefs lose. haven't won a playoff game in over 20 years. Now, that's just the most recent and kind of a good microcosm of why we would expect such a thing to happen here. And I'm not rooting for them to fail. I'm obviously rooting for them to be in the playoffs because it would, you know, we'd give us, that'd be just awesome. I don't even think about how awesome it is, but tell me your thoughts. Am I being a little too crazy about this, a little too Kansas City about this, if you will?
Well, I mean, we don't know anything else, you know? I mean, it's like if it's conditioned behavior, because every single time that there's been a big situation, Kansas City teams have fallen, you know? So if they're in another big situation, all you know is them failing in that spot. So that makes total sense. I mean, my best frame of reference is like KU basketball. You know, that second round matchup is always terrifying, because there's so many times where the team has lost against, you know, that 8 seed or that 9 seed or whatever seed they're up against, and you kind of feel like, oh crap, you know, just get through this game, you can do it. But it's always tough, and so that's kind of what you get used to, is you see it. Even if it's, you know, if it happened in 1998, that has no bearing on 2010's team, but it's still the same, because it's all you know from following them long term as a fan. And it's I think it's the same thing in Kansas City, and especially now where, you know, I've had to like figure out how the heck to be a fan in a playoff race, because I haven't really seen it. So it's pretty tough to sit and you know, watch what's happening now and be like, okay, is this normal? Like on a couple of occasions, I've asked Tigers fans, like, what are you guys feeling right now? Like, what's your thoughts? Because I wanted to know, okay, they've been there. Are they feeling confident even at the time when they were trailing the Royals, or were they feeling like, oh crap, we're going to fall behind and never get back? And, you know, I think for the most part, it's just, I think it's probably any team is probably terrified anyway, but in Kansas City, the track record is there for so many bad teams and so many collapses that I don't think it's overreacting. I don't think it's cursed, but sure as heck feels that way.
Yep. So as we head into this last stretch here, I got to think we'll probably, by the time we record next, we just very well may know the eventual fate of this Royals team, because they'll be done with that Tigers series. And if they get, God forbid, they get swept or they lose 2 out of 3, I mean, it's over for the division. They'll be clinging to wild card life, because the Mariners are only a game behind. And as we speak right now, the Royals are down 3-0 to the White Sox. So
powerhouse White Sox, and the Tigers are up too.
You know, so it's looking bleak. And, you know, last night notwithstanding, I would not blame any sort of a collapse, I guess, barring any further evidence in the future. But I wouldn't necessarily blame something on Yost to say this is it's just a repeat of Milwaukee, but just a situation where, you know, earlier in the season when we were kind of harping on some of this team's shortcomings, you know, we weren't crying wolf there. We weren't making stuff up just to be negative whatever blogger types. You know, there's legitimate concerns, and they're coming back to haunt this team now. And the Royals need to figure out a way to right this ship so that they can, you know, it starts with tonight coming back from 3 down, which seems like, I mean, turn the channel, almost an insurmountable at this point in the season. Exactly. It's sad, but that's where it is. So I don't know. I mean, as we will end on that, but what are your thoughts going forward, Mike? I mean, we just kind of talked about are the playoff chances, but I mean, give me your real honest opinion. You think this is going to happen?
I felt more optimistic before I looked at the score of today's game. So, and it's just,
That's fair.
Yeah. It's just, and it's James Shields too pitching tonight. So that's the other thing, is like, as you go through the rotation, you've got a couple more times through, you know, you've really only got, you know, the Shields games are games you should win. Yes. You know, Ventura games you should probably win. Vargas games you stand a pretty good chance of winning. And then you get into like the Guthrie and, you know, the Duffy slash.
Well, you just hope.
Hendricks. Yeah, and like Guthrie, his last game he pitched really well. So I'll give him credit for that. But you know, the game before that he got shelled. So you're looking at whatever you can get out of the pitcher on that certain day. But guys like Shield and Ventura and Duffy, when he's healthy, you feel like they should be able to give you a winning chance on that day. But there's only so many times to go through now that if one of them does not have a good day, like James Shields is looking like now, well, then that's a problem. And when you consider that tomorrow it would be Duffy's turn, but they're going with Hendricks, that's iffy. And then the last game of the series is Ventura against Chris Sale. And Chris Sale is a robot who just gets out. Yes. And the Royals have not really ever been all that good against him. So it's not very encouraging. And then they turn around and after an off day, they get Detroit. And, you know, they haven't played Detroit well all year either. They won 3 out of 4 just before the All-Star break. That's it. That's about as good as they've been. And so, and then it's Cleveland right after. So, you know, they haven't played Cleveland very well either. And then that's it. You get that last 4 games against the White Sox. The only thing that kind of gives me any kind of, I guess, hope or doesn't make me panic is that Seattle's schedule is really tough too. They've got 7 really against tough. The Angels. They've got 3 against the A's. And they have 6 against the Astros. And the Astros have been playing better. So that's why when you look at those playoff odds that the Mariners, you know, their odds are pretty low relative to the Royals. Well, I don't know. I guess it's not super low, but it does put them on the bottom half. Even if they were probably tied, it would put them, you know, behind the Royals because their projections for the rest of the year are that they're not going to win as many games as the Royals. Now, yeah. The Royals still have to go and win those games. And right now they're not doing a good job of it, but you know, the Mariners, they're facing tougher opponents.
And I've said it before, and I'll stick by it, that I think if I was a fan of a different team looking at the Royals, I'd think, okay, they're probably going to make the playoffs. I mean, you look at, you know, what they've done this season and the hot streak they've been on, knowing they can get hot, and then you look at their position where you've got basically right now you've got 4 teams fighting for 3 spots. You got the Tigers, the Royals, the A's, and the Mariners. A's leading the way with 83 wins and the Tigers both with 83 wins and then down to the Mariners with 80 wins. So all 4 of those teams within 3 games of each other. And so you've got all 4 of them fighting for 3 spots. And the Royals have, at least just in terms of competing with the Mariners, are in a much better position because all 3 remaining playoff spots are basically in play because you can get, they could still win the division. Mm-hmm. They could still get the first wild card and they could still get the second wild card. The Mariners, no way they win the division.
Right.
The first wild card would be tough. So the second wild card is their best bet. You know, the Tigers are in the same boat. They've got all 3 positions open to them. And the A's only have 2 because they're not winning the division either. So they've got the first wild card or the second one. So, you know, the Royals and the Tigers are both in better shape than discounting record just in terms of places available and competition. They're in better shape right now than the A's and the Mariners are, especially because they're both going to have a tougher schedule. Mm-hmm. But that being said, as a Royals fan at this point, seeing them the last 2 weeks and seeing them losing 3-0 tonight in the 3rd inning already, I just like, I'm not going to apologize for being a Kansas City sports fan, but I just don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to fall short, and it's going to be 88 or 89 wins, and we're going to have to hear the same trite stuff over and over again in the off season about making steps and, you know, growing up and taking leaps and being better and next year and look at all this stuff we've got coming up, and Finnegan was great and he's going to be a big piece of this team next year, and, you know, we're going to hear it all. And Ned Yost is going to be back, and Dayton Moore is going to be back, and everybody's going to be back, the whole gang, and it's just going to be, you know, more of the same. So that's – I don't want to get too negative. You know, that was pretty bad right there. But that's kind of how I feel right now. It just doesn't look – the outlook is bleak, and unfortunately, that's where I'm at. I won't apologize. I will not apologize for being destroyed by Kansas City sports my entire life. It's my right to be pessimistic right now. As a Kansas City sports fan.
You're absolutely right.
So, well, with that, we'll leave you.
Yeah, enjoy the rest of your day.
Hope you enjoyed the show. And yes, cheer on the Royals if you can make it out this week, and especially this weekend for the biggest series of our lifetime. And that will be the last time. I'm convinced that will be the last time we say that this year. Because if the Royals win it, then they'll be looking pretty good. If the Royals lose it, then they'll be hanging to a thread, and it'll just be, yeah, it'll be the most important series of our lifetime. So at least for people my generation. So yeah, get out there this week if you can. Get out there this weekend, cheer on these Royals. They need our help. We need to do whatever we can as fans to help them bring this thing home, because I want to see a playoff game before I die. So for Michael Engel, myself, Jeff Herr, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.